Hey everybody, welcome to The Surgery Set. I'm Jonathan Kohler, an assistant professor of pediatric surgery here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, home of the Badgers. This is a podcast about surgery and the people who are at the cutting edge of it. We're glad you're here.
Hi everyone, I'm Angela Ingraham, a trauma and acute care surgeon at the University of Wisconsin. I'm excited to guest host this episode of The Surgery Set. Our guest today is Dr. David Mercer, the McLaughlin Professor and Chairman of the Department of Surgery at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Dr. Mercer is a trauma and critical care surgery specialist with a special interest in multiple organ failure research, as well as resident education. Dr. Mercer has been active in a national examination of surgical residency training and the need for redesign. Dr. Mercer, welcome to the Surgery Set podcast, and welcome back to Madison. So I just want to kind of continue the discussion that you had with the Grand Rounds in terms of the redesign of the residency program, and kind of more specifically in terms of how you see that impacting fellowship training. So as we were just discussing prior to the recording, I did my fellowship at University of Pittsburgh, and I did the acute care surgery fellowship. So it's a two-year fellowship where we have a critical care year, and then our second year is a little bit more flexible in terms of us booking our own cases, serving more as an attending, and kind of getting back to somewhat of that chief resident year that the general surgeons used to have in the fifth year of residency. And so if we do the redesign of the general surgery residency program, do you see that eventually having these acute care surgery specialties and these other fellowships kind of phase out? Or how do you see those two blending and working together better?
I think they're complementary, to tell you the truth. I don't think you'll be doing away with fellowships. I think the question will become is, what are the core competencies we want out of somebody finishing their core training before they go off into specialty training? And as opposed to making general surgery what you call core training, which is what we call it now. Right now we call it general surgery residency, and that's our core training, and then they go into fellowship. The problem is as we noted, there's 23 fellowships. And you can't possibly train everybody to be an expert in all 23 and at the same time train some people to go into practice into rural Nebraska or northern Wisconsin and take care of patients in austere environments. And so I do think we have a challenge, but it's also an opportunity, I think, to look at what is the end product we hope to have out of core training that best prepares them to go on to specialty training. So to answer your question, I don't see the dissolution of fellowships. You may even see the expansion of some fellowships, for God's sakes. But we also need oversight of the fellowships, too. And I think some standardization of there also needs to occur. And I think bariatrics has been kind of in the leadership role of developing some competency-based education in their arena. But it's very niche-driven, so they can do that. Mm-hmm, whereas you get acute care, you got a lot of things to master in acute care, and that makes it more challenging for us.
Right. And so with the residency training, several have gone to having a shortened amount of general surgery years and then going more into those specialties. So I think cardiothoracic has that kind of program, vascular has that kind of program, those types of things. And so in the residency redesign, is the thought that it would still be, like the outcome would be a pure general surgeon, or how do we incorporate those other residencies that have already kind of shortened their general surgery portion so that the residents can start their training in the subspecialty earlier?
The question was, are we going to be eliminating the integrated programs such as cardiothoracic and vascular? And I think the answer to that is no. I think residents and students have spoken with their feet is that they prefer the opportunity to get into their chosen specialty earlier as opposed to later. And I think that'd be a mistake to eliminate that. And I think we need to take a lesson from that too, though, is that people want to get into their specialty sooner. So maybe you shorten core training, which I know is probably, you know, heresy. You know, how can you shorten it from 5 to 4? But that discussion has come up, and it may occur, it may not occur. But I think we keep the integrated programs in there. And if you look at the early specialization programs that are currently out there, those are also becoming more popular. And it allows residents to get into their field earlier, and they can kind of double dip with their chief resident cases and the cases in their specialty that last year, so they get credit, yet they can get off into that specialty sooner and get off into their field sooner rather than later, because it's become a long time. You look at pediatric surgical residencies, 5 years of general surgery. Usually they have to do 2 years of research. Then they do 2 years of fellowship, PGY-9s. And then they go off and do another fellowship.
Yeah.
you know, because they're not satisfied.
You know? I have a friend who became a pediatric transplant surgeon, and so he's probably one of the longest training residents that I know. But and then I guess my other thought is during this time, because as you said, you know, this kind of redesign of residency training is going to take some time to develop and to get right and to optimize and to kind of figure out. But how do we help the residency programs now as we are trying to figure that out? So you had said, or one of your slides had noted that, you know, some of the smaller residency programs aren't meeting the board standards in terms of the qualifying and certifying exams. Fortunately, rarely, but sometimes occur residency programs, you know, graduating someone who it's kind of the undercommon knowledge within the program that they probably are should not necessarily be graduating, that they don't have the confidence that person to necessarily go out and practice independently. And so how do we, while we're trying to fix the overall design of the residency in general, how do we help right now as we're waiting for those changes to occur?
So first of all, I don't want to be misinterpreted on a program that has two residents a year. The problem they run into is that they don't have any wiggle room with failure rate, because if you have five and it counts for 5 years out afterwards, you know, one out of five is 80%. One out of two is 50%.
Right.
And that person counts against you for 5 years. Whereas in a five resident program, I quickly have 25 residents in 5 years. They only have 10. Mm-hmm. So they're at a disadvantage by that mark. Doesn't mean they're producing anything different, but they may have one fail. I have one fail, but I can get away with it because I have more residents in the program than they do. So I think another point to make, though, too, is that we have to admit that there are some programs, and I'm not calling any of them out, that could improve in the quality of the training that they give to their residents and produce a better end product. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the movement then is to even the increase in case number from 750 to 850, most programs, that's not an issue. For some, it might be. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then that's a problem.
Right.
And I think, so part of this is to raise the bar of what we expect out of the product, mm-hmm. not lower it. I mean, remember, too, case minimums. These are minimums. Do you really talk to your residents, this is the minimum we want you to get? We talk to them. We say, we want you to be the best you can be. We want you to perform at the highest level, not at the minimum.
Right.
So we have to remember what we're talking about here. You know, the minimum standards are minimums. So we want them to produce. And I think by raising those minimums raises the standard, I think, of what we expect out of a finished product mm-hmm. in training, mm-hmm. whether it's core training, general surgery, or whatever we define it as moving in the future.
And then finally, this is not necessarily related to residency training, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on, we're focusing on the structured, you know, residency training, but having just finished my fellowship a year ago, now I'm a junior attending, and my...
And have it all solved.
Well, right. But I also, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I can get better. And, you know, there are CME and there are courses that we can take, but I just want to get your thoughts, too, on how can we, after we've completed all this residency and all this fellowship training, how can we as surgeons continue to improve? Because you now are taken away from the structured bubble of training and you're out in the real world and you can go out and seek courses and things to improve, but you don't get that real-time feedback that you had gotten in residency, hopefully, to improve yourself. So how can we as practicing surgeons improve our own training after our organized training?
You know, I think that's sometimes difficult to see as a junior attending mm-hmm. when you first come on board. And, you know, if you look at milestones, it doesn't mean that your training stops.
Right.
It's lifelong learning.
True.
That's what it is. And if you looked at that one continuum I put up there, you know, some people will become an expert faster than others. It doesn't mean you're good. Doesn't mean you're bad. It just, that's the way it goes. But it's a continuum of learning. I'm still learning. Right? I learn from my mistakes. Mm-hmm. Purpose of Morbidity and Mortality Conference like we had this morning is to learn from those things. And you should be taking advantage of every, and you do and you will. You may not just realize it at this point in time, but, you know, and then there's cases that you have that you should take on as a challenge, but seek the input of the other people that are there. That's the structure piece of it. And if you need it, don't be afraid to ask. It's not a sign of weakness. You know, sometimes we're taught that.
Right.
Well, I ask for help. That's the smart person right there.
Right.
That's the person who knows when to ask for help. Don't get into trouble.
Right.
You know, stay out of trouble and ask for help before you get into trouble. Mm-hmm. I think that's the motto there. And, you know, sometimes you're going to get in trouble no matter what you do. So, and I think the good thing is to have somebody who's senior around you.
Right.
Who's there to help. And when you select your jobs, that's important too. You want to know that you got Chip Foley to come in and help you out with a tough colon case.
Right.
You know, that's down in the shot in the rectum.
Right.
You have a colorectal surgeon here who says, you know what, I'm here.
Right.
Let me help you. And most of them love to be asked to help. They love to be asked their opinion. And have you ever met a surgeon who didn't?
True. Well, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. I look forward to having this on our website and on iTunes. And I hope that you have enjoyed your time here so far and look forward to the rest of the day together. So.
It has been a pleasure to be back, and I look forward to the rest of my day and dinner tonight at the Sardine. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Surgery Set. Check back next time when we hear from Dr. Christine Heisler. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology here at UW-Madison, and she talks about vaginal agenesis, a disorder that affects roughly 1 in 5,000 women, and we'll talk about the reconstruction and treatment options available for dealing with this complex disorder.
It is a very uncommon disorder. It affects about 1 in 5,000 women. These women look completely normal as they are. They just were not born with a vagina, and in the complete form of Mullerian agenesis are also born without a uterus.
The Surgery Set is a production of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and myself. It was audio engineered by Chris Hansen and edited by Alex Worley. Our theme song is On Wisconsin, arranged and produced by Jamie Schmidt. I encourage you to visit us at surgery.wisc.edu, where you can find links to Grand Rounds, free CME credits, and more. You can also check out the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Video Library for a wide range of medical education resources at videos.med.wisc.edu. In addition, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And of course, you can follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page and also find us on Twitter at Wisc Surgery, as well as me at J.E. Kohler. Please feel free to let us know how we're doing, and especially let us know if there are topics you'd like us to cover. Thanks, and we hope you check back soon.